Any views expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and not of their employer. Hello and welcome to the Admin Admin Podcast. This is episode 104. It's a podcast for IT professionals. Hi, I'm John, and it's just me this time. So, just a quick heads up. So, the reason why it's just me is because, as you may have remembered, we took a little while off between all of us just due to scheduling issues. And when we came back, we decided that what we really wanted to do was make sure we had like a consistent schedule so that, you know, even if one or two, or in this case, three of us weren't available, we'd still try and get a show out. Now, we were hoping to get a show out in December or record a show in December, which failed. We just kind of couldn't get the scheduling right, and we pushed it back and pushed it back. And today we had planned to record a show and everyone just had things come up, which meant they couldn't make it. So as a result, here I am. It's just me by myself recording a podcast. And that's fine. Obviously, it won't have the usual conversation between the various different hosts, but, you know, it's all good. So I want to talk about, at the moment, it's just about two things, but we'll see how things go along as we go along. So the first thing I want to talk about is server spec. So anyone that's done any programming hopefully will have come across this term called unit testing or test-driven development. And a unit test is when you write your code, you write it with the intention that you will write a unit test to go alongside it. And the unit test will do something like, assuming you give a function called add two numbers, one and two. So you can use your unit test to say, if I give this code, this function, numbers one and two as arguments, I will get the answer three out. And that means that you can test with a reasonable degree of confidence that any changes you make to that function aren't impacting the way it's expecting to be run. So for example, if you wanted to test it to say that if you added one and minus one together, what would you get? Well, the answer is zero. And so you can write a series of these tests. And there's an old joke about someone that works in QA, which is quality assurance. And it's basically where they run tests against an application. But so a QA engineer walks into a bar and orders one beer, nine beers, 99 beers, 9,999,999 beers, minus one beer, Z beers, exclamation mark beers, a glass of water, a glass of milk, a glass of acid, you know, and it's because they'll go in and test all the different permutations of, you know, what do you expect this application to do in these contexts? Anyway, that was a long, windy route there. So server spec is kind of test, unit tests for services and servers. So instead of running it against a piece of code, what you do is you deploy your application or your suites or your playbook against a known quantity and a given machine, and then you run the server spec test against it. Server spec is just the one that I've been using in this case. There are a few others. Some people will know RSpec, which if you use Puppet is, I think, the one that they tend to recommend you use. Server spec is an extension of RSpec. There's some other ones as well, which I came across when I was looking into it, but server spec seemed to be the one that most closely matched what I was trying to do at the time. Server spec, as I said, is based on RSpec, and RSpec is based on Ruby, and Ruby is the programming language that you use in Puppet, amongst other things. So as I've been using Puppet at this employer, in some contexts, I'm quite comfortable with kind of the way that the syntax looks. So in a given directory, you would put your spec file. And I will confess, I didn't write much of the server spec myself. I asked Claude to do it for me and then tweaked what it gave me. And so, for example, in a given spec file, yeah, you might say something like define a file. So describe file and then the file name. And then you say do, it should exist. It should be a file. It should be executable. You can also do things like you can say expect the subject content to match a string or to equal a string. So you can, in one set of tests, for example, I've asked it to, given I've run this test against a testing machine, I can provide it with a CA certificate, a certificate authority certificate that matches a specific value. So I can say, oh, when you run this script, it should deploy this CA certificate that should match. And then it's got all the strings from the CA certificate, for example. And what you can also do is you can create a directory full of stuff and then say include anything that's in there and then say that's got shared examples in it. So in a shared example of the executable file exists, do, and then, and this is the Ruby syntax I was talking about before, you do like a pipe or bar symbol, which is the up and down one, and then file name, for example, and then another pipe symbol. So then you can do the same stuff. Describe file name, do, it should exist, it should be a file, it should be executable. And then in another block, you can then say it behaves like the executable file exists, and then say user bin my script. And so then you can build up like these shared libraries of tests that match a particular set of context. So for example, I went through and I created I've had for quite a while now, a vagrant file, which is the config file to run the vagrant script against, and vagrant provisions, virtual machines. And so then I know that, again, as I said, I pass in specific build values and I know that I'm going to get specific build values back out the other side. So I said something like, so I built it and then provisioned the application that I wanted to run inside it. So again, I've got a known good state to start with. And then I said, run the test against that build. And then it meant that what I could actually, so the reason I was looking at this is because I needed to upgrade the application from one version to the next version or a couple of versions later. And it was a giant provisioning playbook that I was working against. So I provisioned the software in the previous state that I know works, ran the server spec against it. Yep. All these things here, you know, the files are in the right place. The file versions match, the strings match, the config files match. The services are started. Great stuff. They're running on the ports we're expecting. All those sorts of things. All that sort of fun stuff that you do as a server engineer. Then I destroyed the virtual machine with Vagrant, redeployed it with Vagrant, and then deployed the new playbook with the newer version in it, and then reran the tests. And I could say, oh, look, the software is installed in the right place. It matches this string. Oh, this version number's changed, but that's fine because we're expecting that version number change because the software's upgraded. You know, the content of this configuration file has differed, but is that a problem? Can we work with that? Do we need to change it? So I can then run the application and go, yes, the application runs and it hasn't errored. Good stuff. That means that it's still viable to run like that. Change the test. So you either change the environment by making changes to the way it's deployed, making changes to your playbook, so it gives you the outcome you're expecting, or you make changes to the test because you know that they're viable alternatives. Anyway, that was the first thing that I wanted to talk about. This is probably going to be a slightly shorter show than usual. I don't think that's a problem, but you haven't got four of us bantering, which is, you know, it's all fine. So having delivered this server spec stuff, able to do it very fantastic. Okay, that was the first thing I want to talk about. The second thing I want to talk about is MCP servers. So if you are doing any sort of work with LLMs at the moment, and I'm guessing that most of you who either write code for a living or who do operations work. So, you know, keeping servers alive, making sure they're being monitored, all those sorts of things. You'll probably find that you are working more with AI tools these days just because companies like either the feeling that they're getting a more productive engineer out of it or they've seen evidence in one way or another that you are more productive. A little while ago, the company I work for, in fact, a lot of companies were impacted by an outage in Cloudflare. And we used our Grafana instance. So we have several different monitoring solutions that do different things configured for different reasons. But one of the stacks that we've got is Grafana. And Grafana have in their set of tools that you can deploy an MCP server. We installed and configured the MCP server to be able to query the Grafana data sources, and then you can run queries against it. And when I say run queries, it's not like when you used to have to write SQL and say, oh, select star from table ABC where value between X and Y, or, you know, string like a column name like, and then a series of incantations of characters. It's not like that. Instead, what you can do is you can say something like, on this date, at this time, our environment had an incident, and we were impacted from this time to this time. Please can you have a look through the metrics and tell me what impact we had? And so if you haven't got an MCP server that talks to your Grafana instance or your monitoring tool of choice, what you would probably get from your LLM at that point is, please can you run this query and store the output here and let me have it? Or it might say, you can go and check this yourself by clicking through to this and finding this thing. When you've got an MCP server, the MCP server's got access to be able to say, you know, here are my tables, you know, XYZ table, XYZ set of labels. So between timestamp and timestamp, look for records that match this label, or look for this kind of metric. So that's quite cool. The other thing that you can do as well is you can get an MCP that will talk to your chat service, for example. So you can say, between this time and this time, how many times did customer support say that the customers were impacted? Or how long after the incident was over were people still claiming that they were having issues related to that incident? You can not only get data from one data source, you can use other MCPs. So, for example, you can get an MCP for your cloud environment. So you could say, given the number of services that were running on host X, what sort of machine could I go to that would have given me more performance in that incident? Or how large should we have scaled this application up to, keeping the price perspective? Or how many alerts did we get from CloudTrail, CloudWatch in this period of time? How many, I can't even think some other context that you might get from this. But so yeah, so I've been playing with MCPs, and an MCP is actually really quite simple to add to your environment. Most of the LLMs that have got command line tools, fairly standard ways of adding them. So I have used Claude and I have used Gemini code. So they're both installable applications into your operating system that run in the command line. And then you just invoke them with, you know, Claude, Gemini, whatever. I'm sure that other tools can be deployed exactly the same way. Cursor, I think, is one that I've heard of, and Copilot. But for Claude and Gemini, you basically just say Claude or Gemini, MCP add my application name, or, you know, however I want to refer to it as, and then the URL to the application. So, you know, https://mcp.example.org, for example. And then you say what type of transport it is. Most web MCP servers are what they call SSE, which stands for Streamable HTTP, apparently, which I wasn't sure. SSE stands for Server Sent Events, and it's a Streamable HTTP methodology. When you are running an application on your machine, so for example, I was playing around with the AWS CloudWatch MCP, and that one runs in a Docker container. So you do Claude MCP add CloudWatch hyphen my account --- transport stdio, meaning standard input output, and then --, and then the application that you run. So Docker run, I can't remember how you invoke it now, but it's, you know, Docker run something, 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 -E, environment variables, -V, mount volumes, and then the name of the Docker container that you're running. And so once you've done that, you can also set the scope. So typically the scope will be for a particular directory. So it means that you can resume your conversations with your LLM in that directory. So what I tend to do is I create a directory called something like Claude Investigation or Gemini Investigation or Conversation, and then a slash, and then the date and time and the incident or event that I'm working with, so that I can keep the context separate between this incident and the last one, for example. And then what I do from there is you can either add the MCPs that you're using for this particular incident or event in that directory, or you can set the scope to being everything that my user is involved in. So you do minus minus scope space user. So that then means that any Claude or Gemini session that you execute has got access to that MCP then. So this is useful where you have like standard monitoring tools. So again, Grafana being one of them, you know, your chat application might be one of them, your Kubernetes environment. I don't know. I'm making stuff up now, but you might have stuff that you have for your entire environment. And then you might have, a specific context MCP. So perhaps, for example, you have got an MCP that knows how to read the documentation for a particular programming language, for example. So then you would just do that for that one investigation because you don't tend to use that application in most places. Or again, I'm making examples up because this is not exactly how I work, but I'm giving examples of how people might use it. So anyway, so you're on the MCP server, you do the thing, and then you can, as I said, you can use it on a per scope in context. So, you know, everything on this machine or just in this directory. So that was that. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is OgCamp is coming, and with any luck, hopefully I won't make such a botched job of this recording that Dave can't work his usual magic on this, because we do indeed have a Dave that works his magic on our recordings to make us sound vaguely presentable. So assuming I don't give Dave a gazillion work pieces to have to do to fix this, hopefully this recording will be out before OgCamp. So hopefully we will see you at OgCamp. So I'm intending to be there. I believe Al and Jerry are hoping to be there. I don't know whether they will. Stu, hopefully will be there, but I'm not sure. Depends on how stuff goes with him. But so definitely my intention is to be there, and hopefully I will see you there if you're going to come. Obviously it presupposes that you're based in the UK or you've got easy access to the UK. But if you can make it to OgCamp, details are at OgCamp, OGGCAMP.org. Get tickets, come along, and hopefully we'll see you there. And so on that note, I'm going to do a little bit of a wrap up. So obviously, we're proud members of the Other Side Podcast Network. Please see otherside.network for more details about the network and other member podcasts. I do want to thank Dave for being incredibly patient with Admin. Admin is a podcast and a member of the team. He does our audio production and just makes life so much easier for us all. So thank you very much, Dave. If there's anything you want to talk about this episode, about what we've done in the past, what you want us to talk about in the future, we have a Telegram group. There's a link in the show notes and on the website, or you can send an email to us at mail@admin.co.uk. And if you've got any questions you want us to answer, please contact us by email or in our Telegram group, and we'll try and answer it, either if it's not relevant for the podcast in that medium. But if it is relevant to the podcast, we think we can get some content out of it, then we will answer it on one of our next shows. So with that, much shorter episode than usual. Hope it's still enjoyable. This has been John for Admin Admin Podcast, and I will speak to you another time. See you later. Bye-bye. Now it's over. I can open any door. Now it's over.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. find more about our shows at otherside.network.